another episode of the William Branham Historical Research Podcast. I'm your host, John Collins, the author and founder of William Branham Historical Research at william-branham.org, and with me I have my co-host and friend, Pia Hugo, former sister-in-law of Cheon, a super apostle of Nar, and a missionary to the Philippines. That's a mouthful, but I think it's important for what we're going to be talking about. And I've not even updated you yet. I wanted to kind of surprise you with it. But I've been digging in multiple directions, which you may or may not have seen. Been looking into Cindy Jacobs and some of the culture that was birthing people like Cindy Jacobs. Mm. And I, lo and behold, I found out some information that tied it directly back to my research. So this story gets bigger and bigger, but as I mentioned in the introduction, you're the former sister-in-law of Cheon, who is one of the biggest super apostles in Nar. And I want to, I really think this is important that people hear and understand, because I want to not so much point fingers at Cheon or any of the people who are in it, but instead talk about the history of how they got there. And I really want to focus on the system that created them, because for me, that is the most important thing. Very good people can get caught up into the system and turn into problematic creators of problems. I'll just say it like that. Not that I'm saying Cheon is that, but I'm saying that there are really some good people that I know who got caught up in this movement, and it changes them once they get caught up in it.
Thank you so much for having me, John. I really count it as a privilege to be here, because the NAR movement, which I have been a part of, this is my second interview with you, just for the sake of, you know, your audience, they may not know, but they can look at the previous interview if they want to know more about my story. But yeah, as I mentioned in that first interview, I have been part of the NAR system for 40 years. And I pretty much know the who's who in the NAR zoo, if we want to put it that way. And you're right, Cheon, my former brother-in-law, is one of the most, I don't know, known leader and definitely powerful within the NAR circles. But the fact, you know, John, that he's actually not famous outside of the NAR circle, that boggles my mind, because everybody who's been to NAR churches knows him. But I think he is so diabolical that, you know, he's kind of like that mastermind that's lurking behind the scenes, you know, propping up all his little puppets, like Sean Balls, like he's friends with Jeremiah Johnson, Sean Foyt. You know, I'm deliberately using all these men because they're famous. And they are also famously being exposed because a lot of young people, especially, you know, the Gen Z and the Alpha generations, they have been following these puppets, and I call them puppets on purpose, because puppets do the bidding of somebody higher, right? The puppeteer, the grand master. And I'm going to say quite boldly and confidently that Cheon is one of those master puppeteers, if not the grandmaster. I don't know. Maybe I can't go there. Maybe there's someone higher than him that I don't know, you know. But as far as to my knowledge, and I have been following this system very closely, I mean, Cheon, you know, the buck usually stops right there with him. And so when these younger apostles, prophets, pastors, whatever their title might be, evangelists, when they get caught with their pants down And so many of them have literally been caught with their pants down. And YouTube podcasters like yourself have been exposing them, doing like 6-hour videos. There's another guy, Jonathan Welton. I just heard a 6-hour video yesterday. Like, man, it took up most of my day. But I, along with so many Christians today, like, we want to know. We're really hungry to know what is the truth behind all of these guys, right? So going back to what I was saying, you know, as soon as these men get caught, they might get reprimanded, but there's always the restoration process, right? Because the higher ups, like Che On, you mentioned Cindy Jacobs, Bill Johnson. I say higher ups because they're older. And if you ask these younger men, they will look to these guys as their spiritual parents, right? So, you know, when people complain about, you know, Jeremiah Johnson, Sean Foyt, Sean Balls, Jonathan Welton, it's brought up to the hierarchy. And usually what happens is they might say, okay, well, you got to step down for a couple months and go through this, you know, process. But they're so quickly put back into the system, you know, only to victimize even more young, gullible, impressionable Christians, right? Who don't even realize it is a cult. Like, I know this is your expertise, John. I am deliberately using the word cult because at first I didn't think it was a cult. I just thought, no, I'm part of a non-denominational Christian network of churches that maybe has some, you know, like rogue pastors who are not really entrenched in the system. And so if they go too far off with their fantastical, extra biblical, mighty exploits in the name of Jesus, and then they go too far off, they can just snip, snip and say, oh, no, 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 no. We don't want to go that, you know, like way off. That's charismania. We're not charismaniacs. We are mainstream, you know? So those of us in the mainstream, we just keep drinking the Kool-Aid. We just thinking, oh no, it's still safe, right? We're still in a safe space. You know, this Pentecostal charismatic movement, there's still a lot of great elements. So that was me, you know? I was kicked out of my very first NARC church where Pastor Cheon was my senior leader. He was also my former brother-in-law because I was married to his wife's brother. And so when I got kicked out, because I eventually divorced my ex-husband, who was emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically abusive for 10 years. So I finally got divorced in 1996. I still continued to drink the Kool-Aid. I thought that I just, you know, I failed. I failed the system. I was the dysfunctional one, right? I was too broken. And so, you know, I did backslide. They call it backsliding. Nowadays, I guess some people would call it deconstruction. But I walked away from God and my faith. I became a nominal Christian. I still went to church on Sundays, but that was it. For 7 years, you know, because I honestly felt like I was now rejected by God himself. And thankfully, around 2004, because I was going to a more word-based, healthier church, my leaders in that church loved me enough, right, to teach me the right things. We had classes that helped me understand my traumas, my brokenness. And guess what? I actually did get, you know, inner healed. And it was mostly through the word, John. It was mostly through biblical counseling and sound psychologically based therapy. And I'm going to say, at least in the last 15 years of my life, I am thankfully now just a normal, I'm just going to call myself a normal Christian trying to follow Jesus in the best way I know how. That's it. I'm not going to label myself. I'm not going to try to figure out what kind of a Christian I now am. I just know Jesus and I just know the word. And let's just keep it simple. That's my life now, John.
Well, I'm one step behind you because I don't know if I would call myself normal yet. But I know exactly what you're saying. And I want to go back to something you said. You mentioned the puppeteers, and I want to I want that to be the theme of where we're headed, because it isn't really the figures that you see on stage that are the problem. And in my opinion, it isn't even the puppeteers that are the problem, but the system that created all of these puppeteers, for me, it's unbelievable. It really is. My grandfather was the pastor at William Branham's Branham Tabernacle. Branham and Gordon Lindsay are really the ones who you can blame for most of this stuff. I was fairly close friends with Branham's sons. And one of his sons, who is now dead, is the subject matter of prophecy. I believe that before he was an old man, and he was, gosh, his 60s or 70s whenever I knew him, but I believe that before he was an old man, California was going to sink, because that was the prophecy in latter rain. Mm. And he died of old age, which is kind of ironic when you think about it. Mm. But I knew him very closely. My wife fed him biscuits and gravy at the local Dairy Queen, and he would come in his fishing clothes. He was just an average guy. But I also saw how people looked at him from the stage persona side, and I knew him pretty well. I knew him well enough to know that he was very cautious in what he said. He was respectful. I liked him. He was a great guy. But he could say something like, I really think that person needs to not talk in the way that they do, or that person needs to be silenced. Mm. There would be enough people who are just nutty enough that they would make that happen. Then on the other hand, there would be people who watched it happen and thought, oh my gosh, what this, that was a prophecy, that was a prophetic statement. And he's just, and I'm using that as a just generic example, but there were statements that were made that were just casual statements, and you'd have people who would enact those statements and people that thought it was prophetic. That's how weird it gets. Mm-hmm. Well, to the people who thought it's prophetic, now you've created this mystique around them, and they become more than human. They really do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the reason I wanted to focus on puppeteer, this thing that evolved very much mimicked the traveling circuses. If you go way back in time to the tent revivals, you had the traveling circuses. If an acrobat were to fall and make a huge mistake, he'd sit out for a while his leg healed. But then they'd put him back in the ring because he's right. Still making them money. Right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And the people who ran the circuses, they're just average people too. There's no mysterious thing to them, but they have acts that thrill the people and make them feel like there's this mystique around them. Look at these acrobats. Look what they can do. Look at the magician, the lion tamer. All of those people are just average people, but when you're in the crowd, they're more than average. There's something right. to be a subject of awe and inspiration. Right. Well, when Gordon Lindsay and Branham started into the healing revivals, they were on the scene whenever these tents would go around, mostly in the rural areas, but these tents would attract the big crowds. And it isn't even, I don't think they even really had bad intent, but because of the way it was structured, they acted like a circus. They really did. And come see the man who can preach. They even had a levitating boy. Come see the boy who can preach and levitate. It's mimicking a circus, right?
Right.
So to the people of that era, oh my gosh, the power of God can make that little boy levitate while he's preaching with William Branham. To us in this decade, we're like, no, that's not Christian, and that's probably a stage trick. Fast forward, you know, 100 years from now, they're going to look back at these people in these stage acts now that they're calling Christianity, and they're going to say, how did anybody believe this? Don't they know that all of this is just stage acts, stage tricks? So for me, I want to break down the stage acts. And I have, as you know, I have been studying from early 1700s all the way up to the Lateran movement. Then I'd go back again and come another trail. I'm going through all of these trails of history to see the spider web of history. Where did they get all of this stuff?
Yeah.
And now with you, I want to go forward because all of that spider web of history led to one important thing. William Branham's campaign manager, Gordon Lindsay, Branham had a mental health crisis that took him off of the field. The entire organization was intended to advertise his ministry, but when he was taken off, Gordon Lindsay saw the power of it and started attracting other stage acts, other circus acts, right? So he created the Voice of Healing revivals. I want to say there were thousands of these ministers that got involved with this, each one a traveling stage act. So to your point of puppeteers, and there's a Grand Master puppeteer maybe, I look at it a little bit differently. They're gears with the little teeth and the cogs in the gear. Each one is important to that gear because when that gear's moving, if there's one cog missing, suddenly it stops. So each one is this cog in a wheel. Some guy falls to immorality or whatever. Well, his cog is missing and it's all going to come to a screeching halt. So you've got to pick them back up.
Yeah.
I think a system that is built like that, where it's not so much about Christian, but it's about keeping the momentum. That is the problem.
No, I love that. I love your analogies. In fact, you know, when you were talking about the cogs and, you know, I could see the wheels turning. And actually, the term that I'm thinking of right now is like the NAR machine, you know? And I think what you and I are attempting to do here is analyzing that NAR machine, like who started it, you know, how does it, you know, what's the fuel that keeps it going? And, you know, and you're absolutely right. There have been times when some scandal would threaten to stop the machine entirely. But whoever is benefiting from this machine still being, you know, in existence, usually money, power, fame, you know, the usual stuff that drives people. Absolutely. They will quickly, hey, gotta fix that cog, put it back into place. Oh, okay, good. Now we can keep rolling. And my personal desire, the reason why I'm here with you, John, is because I think we just need to stop that machine dead in its tracks and enough with this nonsense. Like, let's just please do away with this whole thing, because you know what it is? It is at the very least a distraction. It's a waste of time. And it's a waste of our money. I mean, you know, like, I still believe in the gospel. I still believe in telling people about what Jesus did for us on the cross. Like, I always go back to that. But I am pretty sure those first century apostles are like rolling in their graves and looking at this church, which resembles nothing like the churches that they built back, you know, as is explained to us in the New Testament. So if I may, I told you I would do this. I came across this very interesting article on Facebook. And it's called Attention is Spiritual Currency. All right. Some people are not pulling on your attention because they love you. Okay, so you called it a circus act. That's perfect, because these circus owners, they're not there because they just love you so much and they love your kids so much that they are doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. We all know they're making it, they're doing it for the money. I mean, can we at least be honest about that? Can these pastors at least be honest that we're taking your tithes and offerings because, you know what, we need to make a living too, right? This is our job. We're your pastors. Somebody has to pay for the bills, you know, the lights and the whatever. At least be honest, you know? All right, so some people are not pulling on your attention because they love you. They are pulling on your attention because your focus feeds them. Every thought repeated long enough becomes an energetic investment. Every emotional attachment becomes a doorway. Every fixation, addiction, drains something from the spirit. And if anybody wants to argue that going to a NAR church, listening to the music, you know, spending an hour just being lulled into complacency and then listening to a very vibrant, exciting speaker who talks about their exploits, the signs and wonders that they are performing. And it's usually in other countries, by the way. It's like, oh, I just came back from Asia, or I just came back from Africa, because there's no way for us to really know, right? And this is what's happening over there. And revival, you know, this is revival. And I spoke to multitudes. It always has to be multitudes, by the way, because it's all about the numbers. No one's going to be impressed that you're able to gather 10 people in Africa, right? It's got to be like, you know, the pictures are always showing like, wow, for miles around, they all came to see this miracle crusade. So it's an addiction, you know. People love to have their ears tickled. That's from the Bible. And so they'll listen to these false prophets, these false apostles. And they don't realize that by spending all that time in churches like this, something is actually being drained from their spirit. A distracted person is easier to manipulate. An exhausted person is easier to control, because mind you, you go to any of these churches, doesn't matter if you're, it's your first Sunday, they might love bomb you and give you free food and free lunch, and you might even get to talk to the pastor. Wow, you have an invitation to the sacred office of the pastor, and he'll talk to you and say, so where are you from? And oh, you know, my wife and I are so happy that you're here. And if you need anything, you know, here's my personal number. If you're lucky, there are some churches that do that. But with enough time, all of a sudden you get a call, and it's not really to check on how your family is doing. It's to tell you that, oh, we need more volunteers for the kids' church. Can you please volunteer, you know, for the children's ministry? And by the way, I know all about this because I was in one of the churches. I was the assistant director for the children's ministry. And man, it was like pulling teeth, getting people to come and volunteer to watch the screaming kids and the crying babies, you know. I mean, I am not trying to make light of these volunteers. I think what they're doing is amazing and they all deserve medals. But not everybody's drawn to that kind of ministry. So, so this part about being exhausted, I honestly don't know of anyone who's been through these NAR churches that did not talk about how exhausting that was. Serving here, serving there, serving everywhere. And then this last one, a confused person struggles to hear themselves clearly. And I think that's the first to go. After the love bombing, after serving, 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 after let's say a year of you giving your time, your money, your energies, because you love God and you think these men and women are trustworthy, you can't even hear yourself think anymore. Like you've got maybe relatives asking you, how come we never see you on Sundays? Like even after your 1 hour church service and we invite you for lunch, you always say no because you're still at church. And, you know, you're nodding because you get it. Church is not just a 1 hour deal. I wish it was. For many church volunteers, it's a whole day affair. And this last part, that is why discernment matters. That is why boundaries matter. And that is why intentionality matters. We need to be mindful of what constantly receives our emotional and our mental energies without ever restoring or healing deeply within us. So I'm just going to conclude it with this. We need to, attention is spiritual currency. So we need to be able to spend it accordingly. So that's why I'm here, because I think too many Christians are spending their spiritual currency, they're focusing and they're giving their attention to a false god. That's what it really is. It's a false god. It is just as diabolical as that golden calf that was built, you know, because people got tired of waiting for Moses and got tired of listening to God for real. So they tell Aaron, hey, build us something. And it's not real and it's not eternal, but it's okay. We'll even give our own gold. We'll cut ourselves or whatever, because people are just impatient. They like what's fantastic and entertaining and whatever. That golden calf looks a lot more fun than the tablets of the Ten Commandments. Like, what? We have to do these things? You know what I mean? So yeah, it's all a circus. It's all a farce. It is a machine that will run us over if we're not careful, if we shut off our brains and just kind of put our thinking, you know, critical thinking skills to the side.
Have you ever wondered how the Pentecostal movement started, or how the progression of modern Pentecostalism transitioned through the latter rain, charismatic, and other fringe movements into the new apostolic reformation? You can learn this and more on William Branham Historical Research's website, william-branham.org. On the books page of the website, you can find the compiled research of John Collins, Charles Paisley, Stephen Montgomery, John McKinnon, and others, with links to the paper, audio, and digital versions of each book. You can also find resources and documentation on various people and topics related to those movements. If you want to contribute to the cause, you can support the podcast by clicking the Contribute button at the top. And as always, be sure to like and subscribe to the audio or video version that you're listening to or watching. On behalf of William Branham Historical Research, we want to thank you for your support. I'm a bit different from many of my peers because I attack the system. I don't look at the people. In fact, I would love to just sit down and have talks with some of the people and try to help them out. I really feel sorry for the people trapped in it, from the person in the rank and file member level to the top tier apostle level. I know people that got caught up in the system. And what you described about the burnout, what you described about spending the emotional energy. Those people who do it for any duration of time, it's just like the stage acts. They really get tired of it. They get burned out, mm-hmm. but they keep doing it. And I know people who have been burned out to the point where they confided in me that they had some real struggles from doing it from day to day, right? Sunday to Sunday. It's the same way in the circus. You have a stage act that performs, they're doing the same act, and maybe the act is tiring, maybe it's audience participation, mm-hmm. and they see people who are getting hurt. I can't keep mm-hmm. doing this. People are getting hurt. Or children who are being emotionally scarred by something that you do that's scary in your act. From town to town to town, well, if that act is making money, the person who runs the circus doesn't care if you're calling this out. Mm-hmm. It's not until the people rise up and say, hey, you can't do this in our town. But by then, they're in the next town. And exactly. That's how this operated. It went from town to town. They modeled it after John Alexander Dowie. I have a book that I was researching him, and he was just like you described as well. He would go into a town and say, in this other place or in this other country, we did this great thing. And everybody's like, wow, the power of God. But they never really stopped to think, did it really happen? Is he really being truthful? And he would bring these satchels of all of these people that got healed. They would write their testimonies out. Nobody really stopped to think, is that a real testimony? Did the person really write that? It wasn't until, I think it was the Los Angeles newspaper, they started questioning, well, we keep hearing of this, but we don't see any people actually being healed. Where are they? But see, the way the stage act works, if you go to one town and they're receptive and they continue to spend, you'll go there until they stop spending. Then you go to the next place. Well, that's what he did. And he ended up moving all the way from the West Coast to Chicago, Illinois, because he literally had exhausted all of his money-making skills there on the West Coast. So this kind of thing happens. But to the person who is caught up in that type of, I don't know what you call it. It's a weird type of employment.
Right.
They would be so much happier if they had a job that earned them real money that wasn't preying upon the people, and they're trapped in a system they can't get out of. Especially once they get rich. Once they get rich, they can't leave that money behind, because where else am I going to make that kind of money, right? But to the people watching it, they think that because of the wealth, this must be of God, because of this prosperity gospel. In fact, from everything that I can tell from how the prosperity gospel was birthed, that was really the catch. They were starting to see all these people getting rich. They needed a theological way to describe why they're getting rich. Otherwise, people would just stop giving to them, right? I truly believe, and it's my opinion, but I truly believe that's why they introduced the prosperity gospel. It's so that we can make all this money and people can say, well, that's of God. Let's give them more. So this kind of thing happened. People were giving them money. But the people who did it, for a while, it's great, you're making all this money, but over time, it turns into a business, and the business, you really don't care. So when people ask me, why don't you call out to some of these leaders? They're preying upon the people. Well, you can do that if you want, but it's like blowing to the wind, because that's how they make their money. They'll just go to the next venue, the next city.
Right, right.
And the interesting part about this is, if you go back to the biblical word apostle, what it means, it's a messenger that's going out to spread the gospel. Most of them don't even do the the revival circuits anymore. They have mm-hmm. built their empires, and they stay in their empire. So it's more Absolutely. Of a kingdom than it is of a spreading of the gospel. So for me, I never attack the person. It is the system. I understand why the system exists, and I feel sorry for everybody that's trapped in it from the bottom to the top.
Yeah, no, I think that's why I do, you know, like working with you, John. My background is I am a history teacher. I was one for 23 years. And, you know, when you study history, you have to look at the patterns, right? Because history will repeat itself. And if we don't learn from the patterns, and if we don't realize, wait, these patterns are, you know, it happened here in the Old Testament. They started following false gods. God wasn't happy, and they had to be judged. And then, oh, wow, here it is again in the New Testament. Same patterns. Look at what they're doing to the Son of God. Look at, you know, to the point where they were persecuting the first disciples and eventually had to kill Jesus and later on the apostles. So like it's, we should be able to see that there is a pattern of rejecting the real God, rejecting the real message of God, and stoning the prophets. You know, I feel like what you and I are trying to do, I would never call you a prophet, and I would never call myself a prophet, but we're messengers. Okay? I mean, just take all the hype and all the whatever emotional stuff attached to labels. So let's just say we're just messengers. And hopefully we are messengers of the real living God. Because I have been following false gods for so long. And you're absolutely right. I'm gonna call them demigods, okay? These leaders, you know, the little G's, they all show up at different times, really throughout history, right? And many of them claim to be from God, the big G. But if you follow the pattern, if you look at the way they might have started with good intentions, like you said, but eventually the fame gets to them. The wealth becomes too tempting to walk away from, you know, the power just goes to their head. I mean, absolute power corrupts absolutely. We all know that. And so when you reach a point where you now have your kingdom, you now have your empire, like you said, then we realize that, oh, I know how to get to where I am. So now I'm just going to create other demigods and other, you know, other gifted and anointed acrobats and lion tamers and whatever you want to call them, right? But they've got something to show, and they know how to wow a crowd, and they know how to attract the multitudes. Well, if you're the guy up here, hey, that's more money for me. So sure, I'll promote your book. I'll endorse your book. And yeah, I heard about the fact that you left your wife and you slept with the secretary, or, you know, you had sexual indiscretionary acts with all those interns and students at your school of supernatural or whatever. They're patterns, John. Like, I don't even need to say names because we've all been hearing about it. And it does seem like in the last year or so, it's like an avalanche. Like, whoa, like, wait, I'm still reading and hearing about this other guy. Now there's this guy, right? Like Jonathan Wilton. Oh my gosh. Like, he's one of the worst. And I just heard about them yesterday, you know? So they just keep cropping up. And you're absolutely right. It is kind of a waste of time to keep talking about each one. I mean, it's interesting, just like it's interesting to talk about Tom Cruise or, you know, Brad Pitt or whatever. Like, it's just like gossip, you know, it's like Hollywood gossip. But is it really worth our time and energy? Just like I read, you know, our attention and our focus is our spiritual currency. So I like that you're focusing on the machine. I like that you're focusing on the overall system, because as a historian, that's what we do. We look at the details, but then we start to look at the patterns and think, where else in history did we see all these characters, these details? And then, like you said, and where are we headed as a result? Because I'm telling you, every dictator, every, you know, whether they're fascist, communist, you know, Nazis, like, it doesn't matter. It never ends well for the dictator. It definitely doesn't do anything for the poor victims. And there's always millions of victims. And none of it is God-honoring. None of it should be part of the true redemption story that we all can look forward to. I really do believe that the cross is where we're going to find victory. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. I believe in all that. You will never convince me not to believe in that. That's why, thank goodness that despite the fact that I've been part of the circus, I've probably been a lion tamer at one point or, you know, doing my little acrobatic act. Yes, I've been away from the NAR circus now for a while, but I will never throw everything out, right? The baby with the bathwater, because my foundation in my Christian faith is so strong. My knowledge of the word, you know, I have read, just like you, I have read the Bible many times, front to back. And I've done deep dives on the word, you know. So for me, I think as historians, as true biblical theologians, we owe it to ourselves and to our fellow Christian brothers and sisters to really get to the truth, you know, and just really expose all of this nonsense and all these distractions. And, you know, I mean, it's distractions at the very least, but it is murderous at the very worst. I mean, I was forced to stay in a physically abusive marriage. My ex-husband could have killed me in my 20s. And Cheon, my pastor, telling me, oh, well, maybe you've been called to be a martyr in your own marriage. That was his advice. Like, really? My dead body is worth more to you than, you know, than having somebody who just wants to be healed, you know, who just wants to live a good Christian life. Like, that's all I ever wanted, John. And because they had all this hidden agenda, they were giving me all kinds of very bad advice. So the whole thing, like I said, it just needs to go. There's just been too many victims, sexual abuse victims, domestic violence victims, spiritual abuse victims. Like, I could go on and on and on. And, you know, I live my life being an advocate for abuse victims. We have a safe house in the Philippines that my husband and I are building and expanding because, you know, because who's going to help them if we don't?
That's the other reason I do what I do. When you think of the gears turning with all of the teeth that are interlocking as it turns, it isn't just the NAR apostles and prophets that are those teeth. It's all the way down to the rank and file member. Think about your situation. Mm-hmm. The reason why you can't let this out is because you're one of the teeth. And if you've ever seen what happens whenever a gear loses a tooth, and as it's spinning, suddenly other teeth go with it. Had your situation been called out publicly, then suddenly now we've got more teeth that are going to fall out of this thing. Because if this is a movement from God that is ebbing and flowing by God, and God is giving us all strength, well, what happens whenever there's a bad situation? What do you do with this? One of the other problems that I see, and that's a large reason for what I do, I've worked with many people who have escaped and deconstructed, probably hundreds at this point. They all tell me, John, I've left God. I don't want anything to do with God. And I don't really push them back. I know that there are others who don't like it that I do this, but I let them go on their journey because it isn't the God of the Bible that they've deconstructed from. It's this God that's been painted by the circus act. And what is it? It's not even, it doesn't even resemble the God of the Bible, so I can't really say that it's a Christian God. Many of those people, one of the first things they tell me whenever they finally do come back around, and some of them do, they'll enter into a church and they'll, I've had multiple people tell me this, John, the scripture just really spoke to me. And they're talking about where it's talking about, I will give you peace and rest.
Mm-hmm.
They never really knew that because they were in a system that was so demanding, so high demand, high control. They didn't know what peace and rest was. And that scripture now has true meaning to them. They were just in the wheel spinning. That's all it was, the wheel spinning. The problem is this. I also have the perspective of being a businessman. When you're trapped in the system, you're trapped in not in a Christian system, you're trapped in a business system. And from a business system, if you've ever seen how vicious stakeholders can be, I can assure you it's a bad thing. Nobody wants to go through that, especially on your Sundays. This is the day of rest, the day of peace, and the day of, you know, comfort. They don't have that because they've built this engine. The engine has to keep moving.
Right.
If it stops at all, they lose everything. They really, it's like they have built a house upside down that's a triangle point, and it's going to fall one way or the other. The problem that I see goes all the way back to the 50s and 60s. After Branham and Lindsay built this thing, they saw the problem too. Once the engine gets bigger, and we've told all these people that this is a movement that's growing because it is the end of days revival.
Right.
What happens when it doesn't grow? Now the business has a significant problem. If you don't show growth year to year to year, then suddenly your movement doesn't work. Your engine stops. And all of the people who are trapped in it are your stakeholders. They're all watching you. Is this growing? I don't think it's growing. This must not be a move of God, right? So what did they do? They come up with this idea of the billion soul harvest. And it dates back, that's some research I published recently. It dates back to the 50s. This is a brilliant scheme for a businessman. We can't grow the business any larger. We've grown it as large as we can grow it. How do we do this? How do we overcome this? Well, how do you do it? You make all of the people who are trapped in it grow it for you.
Right.
Now they become your marketing. They become your advertising.
Oh, yeah.
That's what this was. It was a business strategy to continue to grow.
Absolutely.
It worked. It grew into the charismatic movement. And then there's a point in time, and I'm still investigating that deeply, but there's a point in time when it slowed again. And when it slows, now your business is coming to a screeching halt. Everybody's going to fall out. They come up with a billion soul harvest again because it worked back in the 50s. So for me, it's an engine that keeps the people riding in the vehicle trapped. And for the people who are stuck in it, part of the people at the bottom, they're suffering.
Yeah, and mind you, it might be something that, as you said, it keeps getting rehashed, right? It keeps getting like, oh, this is a new thing. Now, you and I were a little older than other Christians who are younger. And guess what? For them, it is a new thing. This is why we need to know our history. This is why we need to know that, you know, Ecclesiastes said it correctly. There is nothing new under the sun. I mean, there's a reason why King Solomon is considered, right, the greatest intellect there ever was, because it's true. And so I'm really, I know we're almost like wrapping up, but I am very excited to just dissect this machine and see, you know, again, how did it really get started? Where did the cogs come from? Like, how does it all get pieced together in order for us to successfully dismantle it? You know? Yeah, because I am telling you, I have a lot of stories. Anecdotal history is always, effective, because we do need the little stories. We do need the little narratives. But what I really enjoy about, writing history is piecing it all together so that we can see a cohesive framework. Like, oh, so this is the NAR. Like, when I discovered that all the churches I had been a part of was NAR, I was like, oh, okay, at least there's a name now. And I started reading, books that was denouncing NAR theology. At first, I was like, huh, could this be true? Like, could I have been duped all this time? But yeah, now that it's been a few years, and especially this year, I've really just took a hard step back from all of it. It is definitely giving me so much clarity, so much peace. Like you said, I love that verse, come all you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. I've been more restful, more peaceful, more light. I can see friends on Sundays now. Like, I have my Sundays back, and my entire week, because the amount of time, energy, intellectual, capacity that I have invested in this system, it is ridiculous. And you talk about how some of your viewers have walked away from the Lord. And I was about to say, unfortunately, walked away. But you know what? I'm not going to say it that way, because it's their choice. And I don't know if this is a permanent walk away, or if this is something like what I had to do for those 7 years, right? Where I had to go through my own journey and really, like, to use the analogy from the first interview, right? Like, I walked away from my NAR cave and I realized, wow, this is a big, beautiful world. And guess what? The non-believers, they're not out to get me. Not all of them are evil, In fact, some non-believers to this day are my closest friends, and they have shown me only kindness and true compassion. Whereas the ones that I thought were anointed, gifted, Christian healers and leaders and all of that, those were the ones who totally betrayed me, and they weren't around when I needed them. So I like that upside down house. Like, yep, this is totally upside down. There is something really weird about this house, right? That pretends to be the house of the Lord. Yeah, I think even Jesus would not. I know, I don't. I'm not gonna say I don't think. I know. I know that Jesus is looking at this upside down house and shaking his head and saying, okay, kids, let's go back to the basics and let's put this house, back in its place in the right way, in the right position. I think that's what's happening right now. It might seem chaotic to some people, but I actually see it as some great readjustment. I don't want to use the word reformation because that word's already been overused. I'm just gonna call it a readjustment, a realignment to the truth of Jesus Christ. So thank you, John, for letting me do this series with you. I can't wait to be back. And the last thing I'm going to say is I was a history teacher, but I was also an economics teacher. So you and I have two things in common. We both like history, and we both understand a little bit about about economics and business. And you're absolutely right. This machine is a money-making machine. And that is a huge part of what keeps it going. So I would also love to dive into that aspect of this system.
Well, you asked earlier, how do you stop the engine from running? Think back to the circus. Think of the man in the crowd who is watching intently while everybody else is in awe, and he's calling out loudly, I know how you're doing that. I know how you're doing that. Those are the guys that they eject from the circus because they do not want people to critically think. You're there for the show. This is how you stop the engine. If you can get people to critically think, they walk away. Another point, and it actually ties to that one. You were talking about people who walk away, their journey. It's their journey, but it's more than that. This was a movement that trained people to believe that God was so powerless that if you did walk away, he couldn't draw you back. So you're a powerless, different God. It's not the God that's described in the Bible. But more than that, this is also a movement that praised every single time that there was a deathbed conversion. And those same people will tell you, if you go astray, you're closing the door. You're gone for good. Those two can't work together. But a person who's critically thinking, saying, I see what you're doing. I know exactly what you're doing. You're trying to keep the engine running. We need more people to stop and critically think. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to get people to critically think. So thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, John.
If you've enjoyed our show and you want more information, you can check us out on the web. You can find us at william-branham.org. For more about the dark side of the New Apostolic Reformation, you can read Weaponized Religion, From Christian Identity to the NAR, available on Amazon, Kindle, and Audible.